So good afternoon, sisters and brothers in the Dharma. I'm happy here to share with you the precious teaching of the Buddha. The topic I'm going to share with you today is conquering your inner enemy. Conquering your inner enemy. There are two types of enemies. We have two types of enemies. One is external enemy, another is internal enemy. What is external enemy? The external enemies are those who hurt us, who harm us, who cause injury in us. This is called external enemy. And what about internal enemies? Do you have any internal enemies? Yes or no? What internal enemies you have? Greed, yes. Hatred, delusion, conceit, wrong view, restlessness, drugs, remorse, jealousy, covetousness. All these are internal enemies we all have. Why is it called internal enemy? Why greed, hatred, conceit, and so on are called internal enemy? Why you consider them as your internal enemy? When this enemy arrives in your mind, then this enemy torture your mind. Your mind starts to shake. Your mind is defiled. And this enemy defiles your mind and drags you into a depressed state. I give an example. When your mind is obsessed by anger. Anger is a mental state. Every mental state has the potential to produce certain type of matter in your body. So in this case, anger produces a lot of heat element in your body. So because of that heat element, your face turns to red. Your heart beats very fast. And because of this excessive heat element, the wind element in your body also becomes strong. Then the whole body shakes. You lose the balance. Your whole body shakes. You feel that you want to shout or you want to attack somebody to release all the emotions which caused by the anger in your body. This is the reason we treat this anger as our internal enemy. And because this enemy we call in Pali Kilesa. 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 It's called Kilesa because it tortures the mind. It makes the mind dirty. And we suffer at this very moment when we are obsessed by all these internal enemies, as well as if we cannot control this enemy at our mental level, we will take action, maybe to harm other people. And as a result, we harm ourselves and we harm other people. That's why it's called Kilesa or our internal enemy. Among the two enemies, which one do you think it brings more harm? External enemies or internal enemies? Internal enemies. Yes. You are smart. You are wise. Why? Yes, always disperse. This is one of the reasons. Another reason? Yes, okay. Okay, another major reason is more harmful than an internal enemy, because according to the teaching of the Buddha, we believe in cause and effect. Cause and effect. Karma and resultant. Karma and its result. If external enemy, our enemy, our external enemy harm us, verbally or physically. But if we can maintain equanimity and we do not get into anger, then the external enemy only can harm us physically. But if you hurt the internal enemy and you react with anger, revengeful, and you fight with him, and two of you may end up in the jail. And this is the present result. But according to the teaching of the Buddha, every action once performed will leave behind karmic potency. The karmic potency, when it ripens, it will produce very bad results in afterlife. So this internal enemy not only harm us in this present life, as well as in the future life. But external enemies only harm us physically. If you do not get angry, external enemy is unable to harm you mentally. That's why it's very important to recognize our internal enemy. We call kilesa. There are three levels of kilesa. That is a very important topic. Three levels of kilesa, refinement. First one is called latent refinement. Latent in the heart, sleeping refinement. Second one is called obsessive refinement, or arising from the latent, it arises into the surface, up to the mental level. The third one is called transgression refinement. From the mental level, it transfers up to the physical action and verbal action. So there's three types of refinement. Number one, latent refinement. Number two, obsessive refinement. Number three, transgressing refinement. Okay. And how this refinement acts? First, it must come from the latent first. We all have latent refinement. For example, anger, greed, conceit, wrong view, jealousy, covetousness, and so on. And this refinement, latent, dormant in our mental stream. It will not arise if there's no condition for this refinement to arise. For example, now you are listening to my Dhamma talk. Do you have anger now at this present moment? No. But does it mean that you have no anger at all? No. Why? Because the condition for the anger to arise is not present. The condition for the anger to arise is not present. So the anger you have is latent now. Latent, does not show up. But once this our latent defilements mixed with right conditions, it will come into surface. Come into surface, so from the latent defilements, it becomes obsessive or arising defilement. Now, suppose the anger has arisen in your mental level, in your mind. If you cannot control it, if you cannot control it with wise attention or with your effort, and this obsessive defilement will go up into a level of transgressing defilement. You want to release your anger, so you utter harsh speech, or you fight somebody physically, or you hit somebody physically. Give an example. For example, now imagine you are in a coffee shop, drinking, enjoying coffee with your friend. Then suddenly, your external enemy, came in and start to abuse you in many ways. Initially, you are enjoying your coffee with greed. Now, the greed has turned to anger because of the abusive word contact with your ear. Then unpleasant feeling arise in you, and the unpleasant feeling cause anger to arise. So the anger has from the latent go up to the mind. Now you get very, very angry, but you are unable to control this anger, so you start to utter harsh speech to your external enemy, and two of you quarrel with each other, and then you end up fighting with each other. You give him a heavy blow, and so on. So from here you understand how the defilement from the lesson go up to the arising and go up to the transgressing refinement. And the example I cite is only a very small case, personal case. Suppose a politician, a politician who is very ambitious and who has very strong lust, strong grip to conquer the world. So, and because of his obsessive defilement, his arising defilement, then he may do a lot of unwholesome acts to cause a lot of bloodshed in the world. Just like we have known, like Hitler, the German Hitler, because of his hate to the Jews, and it caused so much suffering to the Jews, and he caused the Second World War, and caused so much suffering for the mankind. It's because he cannot control his obsessive defilement, which has arisen in the mind. So, from the welfare of ourselves, and from the welfare of all sentient beings, it's very important to overcome or to conquer our internal defilements, our internal enemies, which are these three types, three levels of defilement. Can you repeat to me the three? Number one, latent defilement. Second, obsessive or arising. Number three, transgressive defilement. Okay. Now I would like to deal one by one. How to overcome this defilement one by one? It's for the benefit and welfare of ourselves, and for the benefit and happiness of all other sentient beings. Number one, we start with the gross one first. If you cannot conquer your gross one, how can you conquer the subtle one? So we should start conquer our gross defilement, which is transgressing defilement. So transgressing defilement occur in two ways. One is through body, another one is through speech. So through body there are three. The action we can perform through the body, number one is healing. Everybody knows. Healing. Healing doesn't mean heal human beings. It's heal animals, also considered healing. Or you kill any beings who have life, is considered killing. Number two is stealing. Number three, sexual misconduct, committing sexual misconduct. These three are called gross defilement come from the body. Okay. Why should we restrain? Or why should we abstain from these three bad bodily actions? Why? We cannot just follow what Buddha says without understanding the reason. Why should I do that? Buddha says, okay, don't kill, don't steal, don't commit any sexual misconduct. But why? Tell me why. That result, that result. Some more? Yes, it hurts oneself and it hurts others. Okay, very good. Yes? It encourages? Yes, okay, good. Some more? Have you ever think of it? Why should I, follow what the Buddha says? They must have reason. Okay. Based on two things, we should abstain from killing, from stealing, and from sexual misconduct. First, out of compassion for other sentient beings. We don't want to be hurt. And we also will not hurt other people. Suppose at night you're walking on the street. Suddenly there's a robber come out in front of you and using a knife put it on your neck, want to kill you. At that moment, how do you feel? How do you feel?
Fear.
Okay, fear. Why you feel fear? Why are you afraid? Why? Because you don't want to die. Yes? Because you cherish your life. You don't want to you don't want to die. So you don't want to die. You don't want to be killed because you love your life. So also, you must understand everybody, every sentient being loves their life. So because of this understanding, we don't want to be killed, other people also don't want to be killed. Because of this understanding, we abstain from killing. Out of compassion for ourselves and for others. Secondly, this abstaining from the physical actions must be observed through the right understanding of the law of karma. The law of karma. The law of karma says every action has its own reaction. Einstein, Albert Einstein also says so. Every action has its own reaction. Suppose you throw a ball on the wall. The ball will bounce. This is called action and reaction. So also, our action all our actions have their own reaction. And this reaction are bound to come back to us. Whether the good or bad, they are bound to come back to us. So if we perform killing, kill other people, this action. And when the reaction comes to us, we will be killed by others. in Buddha, in the teaching of the Buddha, this is called Cetana. Buddha say, Cetana hang bhikkhave samma vadami. I say, volition is karma. And when you have the volition to kill other people, because you make this person's life short. You want to kill him to make his life short. This is the volition. So as a result, you get short life in the future. This is called action and reaction. So we abstain from all the bad bodily behavior because first, out of compassion for others, secondly, with the right understanding of law of karma. And we observe this abstain from killing, stealing and sexual misconduct also to protect ourselves. To protect ourselves. Buddha said that suppose a king, a minister, when a king and minister, whenever they go out, they are protected by many bodyguards, or many bodyguards and many armies. But Buddha said, this is not a real protection. Why? Because this type of protection is from internal, sorry, from external. This type of protection is external protection. But those who observe or those who abstain from these three bodily bad actions, they have internal protection. When you have internal protection wherever you go, you are fearless. You become very brave. You are fearless. And people also like you because you provide security for them. That by associating with you, they know you will not harm me. You will not steal my property. You will not commit any sexual misconduct with my wife, my husband, and so on. So you are trustworthy. And you have very good, better human relationship. So this is the reason we should abstain from three bodily actions. Okay? And another verbal action, we have four verbal actions. Number one is harsh speech. Second, backbiting or slandering. Number three, telling lies. And number four, frivolous talk. So we also abstain this four based on the same compassion and understanding, and for the peace of the world as well. So this, to overcome this transgressing refinement, we observe the five precepts. To protect ourselves as well as to protect other sentient beings. To protect ourselves in this life as well as in the life after. Because every action leaves behind their karmic potency. And this karmic potency, when meet with favorable conditions, they will bear their result. And the result is not only occur one time. For example, when you kill one being, then next life you will be killed because every action has its reaction. But you will not be killed only one time. You will be killed many, numerous times, thousand times. So also the good action you perform will bear the result in this present life as well as the future life, not only one time, but numerous times. Okay. Now we come to the second level of refinement, obsessive refinement. The refinement which has come into surface and arising at the mental level.
For example, anger, greed, conceit, wrong view, and so on. Now let us talk about the root first. The three main evil root: greed, hatred, and delusion. Okay, now let us talk about the greed. The greed, for example, the greed has arisen in your mind. For a man, let's say a man, when you go to somewhere and you meet with so many charming, charming and beautiful women, then when I come to contact with all this attractive object, and the greed, the lust, has arisen in your heart at that time, what should you do? The man, what should you do? At that time, your mind obsessed by the lust already. How can you control your lust? Accept, not do, just accept. But it upsets your mind, you lose your balance already, you lose your tranquility and everything. what will you do? Never encountered before. I think it's very common among the men. So the Buddha gives many ways. Buddha gives many ways. In one of his discourse, it's called overcoming distracting thought. He said that when the greed has arisen in a person's mind, he should take the opposite state of that center, of that defilement. By paying opposite state of that defilement, you are able to overcome your defilement. So what is the opposite state of greed? What? No, the for example the last two thoughts. Aversion to it. Okay. So now, the mind comes to contact with the last two objects. That cause the lust for some of the very charming, beautiful women. So a man will come, his eye come to contact with this lustful object, then the greed, the lust, has arisen in his mind. So Buddha asked you to pay opposite state of that lustful thought. Why lustful thought arise? Because you pay attention to the beauty, you pay attention to the beauty sign of that object. You pay attention to the attractive sign of that object. That's why lust appears. So in order to conquer your lust, you should pay attention to the opposite side of beauty. What is that? Repulsiveness. Foulness. The foulness of the body, the repulsiveness of the body. Okay, how can you develop that foulness or foulness perception of the body? A repulsiveness, the perception of repulsiveness, the perception of foulness of the human body. How can you do that? Yes, we practice 32 parts of the body. Have you heard about 32 parts of the body? In the teaching of the Buddha, we have 40 types of meditation subjects. For example, anapana, mindfulness of breathing. And another one is called recollecting the impurity of the body. This body is made up by 32 parts. You want to know all 32? So number one, head hair. Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin is one group. Second group, flesh, female, bone marrow, kidney. Number third, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, and lung. Number fourth, intestine, big, small intestine, big intestine, and undigested food, feces, and brain. The next one, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, fat, sweat, fat. And the last group, tears, grief, saliva, snot, and the last one, oil of joints, and urine. So all 33, 32. So you collect one by one. Huh? You take this woman's body, and you collect one by one. Head, hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, kidney, feces, pus, blood, and snot, up to the urine, your last completely disappears together with the urine. This is the way how you can overcome your last food taught by the Buddha. Isn't it very skillful? So this is the way to, you know, overcome the last food taught. Okay, another one is we collect a skeleton. This body covered by the flesh, but actually it's only a skeleton. So if you can remove that flesh and keep the perception of skeleton, then your last two thoughts also will not arise. You just pay, you know, skeleton, you don't see the beauty part of this human body. Skeleton, same as men, woman also same, So if you get attracted by a man, also pay attention to his skeleton. Don't pay attention to his beauty part of the body. So skeleton. So until the perception of skeleton becomes so strong in you, so whenever you open your eye, you just see skeleton. There's a meditator in our monastery. She's Italian meditator. So she practiced this skeleton meditation. One day she went to market to purchase something. So while she was going out, she took the perception of skeleton. So when she reached the market, then later on she told me, but what I see, all are the skeleton moving about. She cannot see anyone, only skeleton moving about. This is called skeleton perception of skeleton can become so strong. Feel what you see all become skeleton. Of course, not the real one, because of a perception. Practice makes perfect. Because of the continual practice, then your perception of skeleton becomes so strong, and whatever you see, just skeleton. This is the wonder of meditation, wonderful of mind. Okay, so this is one way to overcome the last. If you cannot overcome the last which has arisen in your mind, you might, this obsessive defilement might become transgressive defilement. You may commit sexual misconduct with this woman, which leaves behind many unwholesome karmic energy in your mental stream. And those who have committed sexual misconduct, I have interviewed many meditators who can discern their past life. Those who have committed this sexual misconduct, most of them will go to hell. This is what they told me. When they discern their past life, many people can know their past life. That's why it's important to conquer your obsessive refinement that may come up to the mental level. Okay, now we go to the second one, anger. So what's the opposite state of the anger? Very easy, loving kindness. The opposite state of anger is loving kindness. So when you get angry with somebody, you send loving kindness to him. May this person be well and happy, may this person free from danger. But you may think, I'm so angry with him, how can I have loving kindness to him at this moment? It sounds impossible, you know. It sounds impossible because you have never practiced before. If you have practiced it for a long time, it's so easy, you know. for my own case, you know. If I hurt many, and I mean, as a human being, we all encounter many, you know, abusive words, you know. Somebody may curse you, scold you, and without any reason, abuse you without any reason. I mean, everybody encounters such unpleasant experience. So because we have been practicing, you know, the Dharma for a long time, so immediately we can pick this person and send our loving kindness to him. May this person free from suffering, may this person be well and happy. And very soon, the anger disappears very fast. But for those who have not mastered their mind yet, it's very, very difficult. When you send, may this person be well and happy, may this person be well and happy, you may end up, you want to get up and give him a blow, you know. So you may end up in this way because you have not yet mastered your mind yet. So if this, by sending loving kindness, if it cannot work for you, there are many ways you can do. There are many other ways. In the Visuddhi Marga, the path of purification lists down many ways. For example, you can try like what I have said just now. Resolution into elements. Try his body and try resolution into 32 parts. One by one, you recollect this body who hurts me. This body, this person who hurts me, who is he? Let me investigate. Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, you know, urine, feces, up to snot. Nobody. Nobody. Only 32 parts. You know, which part I'm angry of? His feces? His urine? His past? Which part I'm angry with? So if you can try this resolution into 32 parts, your anger also find no foothold to arise. And not only that, your wisdom grows. You understand there's no self. The self is just a conceptual idea. Self is only conceptual idea. What is really exists is made up by all these 32 parts. A person, what is called body, is only made up by this 32 parts. So not only you can overcome your anger, you also grow in wisdom, seeing things as they really are. Or you can try five aggregates, four elements. We know this body is composed of four elements. So you try earth element, fire, wind, water element. So which element you angry with? Which element of heat you angry with? So you try one by one, also your anger will disappear, and you understand in each individual well. So this is the second way you can try. And if cannot, the Buddha continue. In this sutta, Buddha continue to say, if you try the opposite mental state and yet you cannot overcome your obsessive refinement, you should try the second step. You should try to recollect the danger of your own defilement. The danger of it. For example, anger. You should try to reflect the danger of anger. What's the danger of anger? Then you understand. Because of anger, then I perform very bad bodily behavior, very bad verbally behavior. And when the anger arises in me, I lose my balance. I lose my tranquility of mind. And not only that, And as anger, as a result, anger produces very ugly complexion. Not only at this moment. If you get angry, if you can bring one mirror with you, every time when you get angry, you take out the mirror and see your face, then your anger may disappear very soon. So not only now, in the future also, angry person will have very you know, agri complexion. So you should remind the danger of it. And if you get angry and you die at this very moment, then you may go to hell. No? One of my friends who is English nun, she can recollect her past life. One of her past lives, she was Deva, heavenly being, Deva. And she fell in love with one Devi in the heaven. So, but this Devi, this woman, a woman heavenly being, this Devi finally go to another Devi. So my friend, while he was Deva, he was so angry with this Devi. So because of the anger, immediately his life was cut off. Immediately he died and passed away from this heavenly realm and reborn in hungry ghost realm because of the anger. So you should reflect, oh, the danger of this anger. Now if I die at this very moment, I may fall into four woeful states. So while reflecting like that, then the anger may disappear, the lust may disappear, the conceit may disappear. And what's the conceit? What's the danger of being conceited? Buddha says in the Sula Kamma Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha says conceit produces low birth. You will be reborn in very low family. A conceited person, the result is reborn in a very low family. Of course, reborn in a four woeful state, but if he will be reborn in human existence, he will be reborn in a very low family. So you reflect all this cause and effect, then the danger of all this refinement, then it may disappear in your mind. Okay, this is the second way the Buddha now taught. The third way, he said that if this cannot work because obsessive defilement is very strong, you know, it overpower us. So the third alternative the Buddha gives is to not to pay attention to this distracting thought, not to pay attention to it. For example, anger arises in you, the greed arises in you, the conceit, the wrong view, the cruelty. Don't pay attention to it. Just divert or avert your attention to other objects. Or you go and listen to Dharma talk, you go and talk to other people, you read books. Don't entertain that thought at this moment. So you temporarily forget about it. Just like now you are looking at me. But now you feel that you don't want to look at me anymore. Now you don't want to look at me. What will you do? What will you do? Now you close your eyes. So you do, if you don't want to entertain all this obsessive thought, you avert your attention to other objects. Then that obsessive thought defilement loses its power temporarily, for the time being. Okay, this is the third way. Number four, Buddha said, if this also cannot work because of the power of the obsessive defilement, the Buddha said, the fourth way you can do is to try to investigate the cause of this obsessive thought. What caused the greed to arise? What caused the anger to arise? What caused the conceit to arise? What caused the jealousy to arise? We try to investigate the cause of it. Then you tackle that cause. When that cause disappears, the effect of anger, greed, jealousy also will disappear. Because cause and effect. For example, somebody abuse you. Somebody abuse you. The Buddha says because of sound. The sound comes to contact with your ear. Then Dependent on contact, feeling arise. Dependent on contact, feeling arise. Because it's abusive word, that's why unpleasant feeling arise in you. Because of the unpleasant feeling, anger arise. So now we investigate. What is the cause of my anger? Because of the contact, real contact. Now the sound, the abusive word has stopped. Stop already. No more ear contact. When there's no ear contact, will there be any feeling or not? According to dependent origination, dependent on contact, feeling arise. So now no ear contact. Will there be any feeling or not? Yes or no? No feeling. But just now people abuse you 3 minutes. Now 3 minutes over. No more sound. Do you still feel unpleasant? Yes or no? Yes. No logic. Now no more ear contact already. No more abusive word contact your ear. Why you still have that unpleasant feeling? Why you still get angry? Okay, you investigate the cause. Why? Okay, now you investigate. Why? Okay. Some more answer? I think this happened to us all the time. So when you investigate the cause, even now the sound abusive words already passed away. Only this abusive word comes to contact with my ear only for 3 minutes. But I get angry the whole day. Spoil my day. why am I so foolish? So you investigate why? Because of your clinging. Because of your clinging toward this sound, toward this unpleasant, abusive word. And because of your clinging to your own feeling, you think this unpleasant feeling as I, mine, myself. This unpleasant feeling as I, mine, myself. Although the sound, abusive word already passed away, already stopped, but because of the clinging to this unpleasant feeling as I, mine, myself, that's why you suffer a lot. If you can let go of that clinging to the feeling as I, mine, myself, you just contemplate unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. When the sound stops, unpleasant feeling pass away. If you can contemplate in this way, you will not suffer. When the abusive word stops, your unpleasant feeling also stops, and you are free from the anger. But because we cannot contemplate in this way, we cling to this unpleasant feeling as I, as mine, as myself. So you not only suffer today, tomorrow when you think of it, you suffer again. Next time you think of it, you suffer again. Until your dying moment, you still think of it. You still think of it. That's why there are three stages of, there are three levels of reaction. For example, the first level, for those who are not meditated, they don't know how to contemplate feeling as impermanence. So when this abusive word comes to contact with his ear, he gets so much angry, because unpleasant feeling causes anger. He gets so much angry and he holds on to this anger. He holds on to this anger like cast the anger on the rock. He cast his anger on the rock. So when time passed by, he died already. Next life he come again. He saw the anger he had cast on the rock. And then the anger lasts for many lifetimes. This non-meditator, ordinary person who did not know how to contemplate feelings. The second meditator, the second type of person, he is a meditator. So when this abusive word comes to contact with his ear, unpleasant feeling arises. Because the unpleasant feeling, he know, he contemplate this unpleasant feeling has arisen in me. It is impermanent. It's produced by cause. Cause also impermanent. Unpleasant feeling also impermanent. And this unpleasant feeling is also not a self. It's just a mental state. It's just a feeling as feeling. Feeling is not a self. So he contemplated in this way, then unpleasant feeling disappeared. Just like this meditator tried to write a word on the beach. He writes a word on the beach. Yes, the word appears on the beach, but very soon when the waves come, the waves wash away that word. So yes, unpleasant feeling actually arrives in his mind. The anger has arisen in his mind. So he writes on the beach. But very soon, because when he contemplates, then the anger disappears. So the waves wash away. No trace anymore. This is the second type of meditator. The first one is non-meditator. Second is meditator. The third type is whatever emotion he has, he draws on the water. Cannot appear, the word cannot appear. Anger cannot appear in him because he draw on the water. This type is called noble one, the noble one. The noble one, no matter how much you poke him, insult him, there's no anger in him. He can't, he just draw on the water. It cannot become any word. So, which type of person you want to be? Which type of person you want to be? Don't cast your anger on the rock. Okay? Okay, so this is the way how to overcome the obsessive refinement. Okay, now anger, now we come to view, wrong view. The wrong view has arisen in us. So how at that time, how to overcome, how to conquer this internal enemy of wrong view, the wrong view of self. Whatever emotion you have, all based on this wrong view of self. Because you cling to it as I, mine, myself. For example, your greed, your anger, your conceit, your jealousy. The moment you cling to it, you identify anger as I, anger as mine. You identify the jealousy as I, jealousy as mine. You cannot free yourself from the anger. You cannot free yourself from the jealousy. So when all these defilements arise in you, you investigate it. Especially the wrong view of self arise in you. You investigate what is this self. Usually the self arises, the wrong view of self arises based on the five aggregates. Do you know the five aggregates? Or mind and body. In another word, mind and body. So the wrong view of self arises based on the mind and body. You identify body as I, mind, myself. Of mind, mind there are four. Mind and body is equal to same as five aggregates. Five aggregates, number one is material aggregate. Then number two, feeling aggregate. Number three, perception aggregate. Number four, formation aggregate. Number five, consciousness aggregate. So materiality aggregate equal to body. The remaining four mental aggregate equal to mind. So if the only wrong view of self, when it arises, must grounded on this five aggregates. So then you investigate one by one. What is this body? Why I identify body as I? So I investigate this body. What is this body? Why you understand this body? How you understand this body?
My being, my person, myself, you, my.
So all these are called wrong view of a self. So now you want to investigate. You want to find out what is this self in order to, you know, to let go, to demolish this self. So you start to investigate the ultimate truth. Name, a person, self, all these are called conventional truth. So you must go one step deeper into ultimate truth. So in the ultimate sense, what is this body? Body is composed of only four elements. Number one, earth element. Number two, water element. Number three, fire element. Number four, wind element. So if you can, you know, investigate this body, only four elements, then the perception of self will disappear. We never identify earth as self. We never identify water element as self. We never identify wind element as self. We never identify temperature element as self. But if you say body, you quickly identify body as self. No? But if you can say only water element, fire element, wind element, then the perception of self disappears. Okay, so also you investigate the mind. What is this mind? Mind and body. All the human beings made up by mind and body. So you investigate this mind. This mind is none other than perception. What is perception? Perception means perceive the quality of object so that you can recognize it again. So when the perception occurs, then you know it's just a perception. Perception is not I, not mine, not myself. Then another mental state is feeling. What is feeling? Feeling has the characteristic of enjoying or experiencing the desirable and undesirable aspect of an object. So feeling has this quality. He can experience the desirable and undesirable aspect of an object. So when you are enjoying something, you don't identify this enjoyment as I, my, myself. But you recognize this enjoyment is a function of feeling. So it's feeling aggregate. So you disidentify a self with feeling. Only then you can free yourself from the entanglement of feeling. So this is how you can overcome your obsessive disorder. Okay, now we come to, although we try very hard to overcome our obsessive refinement, so it will not go to the transgressing refinement. Sometimes we may be able to overcome our anger. So we use the way just now, I mentioned, we use one of the ways to overcome our anger, then we win over. We win over our anger. We become very happy. But second time, the anger arises again. The third time, it arises again. You know? So what are the cause that this anger, this obsessive refinement, once overcome, it does not go away forever? Why it does not go away forever? Yes, right. Because the latent refinement remains intact. The latent one, the sleeping one, the latent refinement remain intact. So even though you can remove your obsessive refinement which arrives at the mental level at this moment, but it will appear again, it will arise again. Because the latent refinements remain intact. So the most important, the ultimate resolution is to conquer, is to overcome, is to uproot or eliminate the latent defilement. How can we uproot the latent defilement? Only by attainment of past knowledge. We have four types of past knowledge. Number one is called stream enterer past knowledge. Number two we call once returning past knowledge. Number three we call non-returning past knowledge. And number four, arahant past knowledge. So only by attaining these four types of past knowledge, we can completely uproot this latent refinement. When this latent refinements are completely uprooted, then you are free from all types of refinement. You will be the most happy person in the world. No one can conquer you anymore. No one can hurt you. And you will be a person completely liberated from all round of rebirth. But how to achieve this four path knowledge? How? By practicing vipassana. Vipassana. We have two types of practice. One is called samatha, the second one is called vipassana. The whole system of Buddha's teaching comprises only three trainings. One is called morality training, the second one we call concentration training, and the third one we call wisdom training. So when we come to retreat, I start tomorrow, we practice concentration training together with wisdom training. The purpose of practicing concentration training is to see things as they really are. Buddha says, those who have concentration see things as they really are. So first we develop concentration, because the concentration makes our mind very clear. Only with the clarity of the mind, you can penetrate into the ultimate reality. So we start with concentration training, then we develop certain degree of concentration, we use this concentration to go to vipassana meditation. And what is vipassana meditation? Vipassana meditation is to see things as impermanent, suffering, unsatisfactory, and non-self, or emptiness, void. So what things you have to see as impermanent, non-self, and emptiness, or suffering? So what are the objects of the vipassana? Can you answer me? I suppose all of you have some experience in the meditation. So what are the objects you observe? What object you observe in your vipassana meditation? Object. Impermanent of what? Impermanent of what? Yes, right. Body and mind. So please remember, when you come to vipassana practice, you've got to observe body and mind internally as well as externally. Not only internally, not only your own body and mind, but other people's body and mind also, you have to observe it in the sense of impermanence, non-self, and suffering. Because we not only attach to our body, we also attach to other people's bodies. So you attach to your husband attach to you attach to your son and daughter. That's why you cannot become a nun like me. Because your attachment is external body as well. The nun may have attachment to a lot. Me as a nun, I may still have attachment to my five aggregates, but at least I have no attachment to external aggregates. But as a lay person, you have attachment to your own five aggregates as well as external aggregates. So it's important to observe both internal and external. So the object of Vipassana meditation is five aggregates, or mind and body. Same meaning, mind and body. So whatever arises in your body, either any sensation, hot, cold, heart, itchy, wind, everything are only four elements. When you observe, you start to know, oh, this heart, this spirit. Heart and spirit are earth elements. Then sometimes you feel the body shaking, moving, this wind element. And sometimes you feel your body cold, hot, this fire element. So you observe your body, then you start to understand your body is just four elements. Then when you come to understanding the body is not a self, it's just composed of four elements, this is called right vision of non-self. You start to disidentify your body as self. And this is a very important thing that you have to learn. Then when you keep on observing this, four elements, you also realize they arise and pass away. Arise, pass away, arising and passing away. They are not permanent at all. They're changing all the time. One minute I observe heat, then it becomes cold. Then when cold, it becomes stiff. When stiff, it becomes, expanding and so on. So you see the four elements keep on changing in your body. When you see it's impermanent nature, then gradually you start to let go. You cannot control. You have to let go because you start to realize, since I cannot control the working of all these four elements, the only resolution, the only solution I have is to let go of it. Let it happen by itself. So you just watch, see arise, see pass. Then gradually, if you can see very fast arising and passing away, arising and passing away, then you start to understand. Being oppressed by constant arising and passing away, it is unsatisfactory. It cannot give you happiness. It's very unsatisfactory, Then you start to realize what Buddha says. Dukkha, dukkha, unsatisfactory, unsatisfactory. So you start to understand impermanent nature of your body. Being oppressed by constant arising and passing away is suffering. And being oppressed by constant arising and passing away, how can I regard it as a permanent self? You start to come to realization, I cannot regard it as a permanent self. So you understand non-self nature of your body. This is right understanding. And by this right understanding, you start to detach from your body. When there is detachment, there is happiness. When there is attachment, there is suffering. So from observing your body, then you go to observing your mind. Whatever mind, whatever sixth sense, any sixth sense object come to contact with sixth sense basis. For example, visible object comes to contact with your eye. Sound comes to contact with your ear. Smell comes to contact with your nose. The taste comes to contact with your tongue. And the tangible object comes to contact with your body. Then you see there are many feelings arises when the five sense objects come to contact with five sense bases. There's many feelings, either pleasant feelings or unpleasant feelings or neutral feelings. Then you start to be aware, you look. For example, somebody praise you, come to contact with your ear, so much pleasant feeling. You start to hear that it's a pleasant feeling. And when you watch this pleasant feeling, you also see, very soon it disappears. It doesn't last long.
it disappear already.
When it disappear already, then unpleasant feeling takes over. Because what you attach to that present feeling now disappears. So you feel so sad. So unpleasant feeling arises again. Then you start to aware, unpleasant feeling arises. Then you watch it again, it disappears again. So you start to understand everything is coming and going, coming and going. There's nothing can be, nothing is permanent. Everything depends on the cause. The pleasant feeling arises because of the praise word. That's the cause. Then the effect is pleasant feeling. Then when the cause disappears, pleasant feeling also disappears. Then you understand only cause and effect, cause and effect. There's no I, just cause and effect. And you understand impermanence, you understand cause and effect. When you understand in this way, then you will gradually you will let go of it. So when you see many times pleasant feeling arise, pass away, due to the cause and condition, then it will come to a point when whatever feeling arise in you, you no more attach to it. When you can free from the attachment, at that moment you are free from all defilements. And the freedom of the heart. The freedom of the heart that gives you the real happiness. This is called Vipassana meditation. So Vipassana meditation is to observe whatever arises in your body and mind and see their impermanent nature and constantly oppressed by arising and passing away, it is suffering. So what Buddha teaches suffering is not only the bodily suffering, not only aging, sickness and death. Aging, sickness and death, everybody has to encounter. Even you are disregard whether you are Muslim, Christian, Buddhist. Once you come to this life, you have to face aging, sickness and death. But what Buddha mentioned suffering is the constant arising and passing away. Repeated arising and passing away that gives you a sense of suffering because you cannot control it. You cannot control something arise not to pass away. You cannot control. But you cannot control something pass away already, or your unpleasant feeling pass away already. You cannot control it not to arise again. So it seems the phenomena going on without your control. Then you feel a sense of unsatisfactory, a sense of suffering. This is what Buddha meant, suffering, dukkha. And when you understand impermanence, you understand suffering, you also understand non-self. By understanding one, you understand the rest. So gradually, then you become disenchanted. You become disenchanted to whatever arises in your mind and body. Because you know you cannot hold on to it. It keeps on arising and passing away. You cannot hold on to it. You become disenchanted. You become disgust. Not aversion. You become disgust, disenchanted. Then, when you get disenchanted, you have more energy. You want to liberate yourself from all this arising and passing away, from all this formation. Then you practice harder until you reach a point, then you become stream emperor. You become stream emperor, then you eradicate three refinements or three factors permanently. Number one is called personality view or identity view. You no more identify your body, your feeling, your perception, your formation, your consciousness as I, mine, myself. And also, you have unshakable faith towards Tibetan. You have removed your doubt towards Tibetan because you have own practical experience. Your practical experience is independent on others. So you have no more doubt. you have removed, uproot the doubt forever. And the third one, you uproot all the rites and rituals. Some, you know, in some belief they say that by just praying, you can, you know, you can liberate it. You no more believe that. Because you only know, only by vipassana, by noble eightfold path, you reach the goal. So you believe only by noble eightfold path, this is the correct path, not by praying, not by belief in God. So once you attain Supreme Emperor, you permanently eradicate three factors. Number one, identity view. The second, doubt. The third one, clinging to rites and riches. R-I-T-E, rites and riches. Certain ceremony, you know, clinging to certain practice, believing that this practice will lead you to the liberation. You no more cling to that ceremony, that practice. Because what you really experience is your own vipassana knowledge. You believe only vipassana is the only way. Now vipassana all. To say vipassana is too narrow. We should say the noble eightfold path. You believe the noble eightfold path is the only way to liberate yourself. Okay. Doubt about three persons. Doubt about three persons, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. You no more doubt. You permanent, forever uproot this doubt. Okay. So, as you keep on meditating, once you become the noble one of Supreme Emperor, you eradicate, you have ten factors. Now you have eradicated three. There are seven. Another seven latent refinements in you. So you continue practice. For a noble, the first attainment we call Supreme Emperor. Once you become Supreme Emperor, you want to go further to become, once returning, you practice the same way by observing the three characteristics of impermanence, unsatisfactory and non-self nature of five aggregates internally and externally. You practice the same way again and again, again and again, until your inside knowledge becomes matured. Then you attain second stage of sainthood, we call once returning. Once returning, this stage does not uproot permanently any defilement, but lessen the anger and greed. Anger and greed become very less. Then you continue again, practice in the same way until you reach the third stage we call non-returning, anagami, non-returning. Non-returning, why is called non-returning? Because it will never come back to this sensual world again. Once you become non-returning, when you pass away, you will never reborn again in this sensual world. You will reborn in fine material world and become arahant at that plane of existence. So anagami, once returning, permanently eradicate anger and the craving to be reborn in the sensual world. And as you continue, finally you reach arahantship. Arahantship permanently eradicate another five factors. Number one, conceit. Number two, ignorance. Number three, restlessness. Number four, craving for fine material existence. And number six, craving for immaterial existence. So now the all ten factors are completely uprooted by the Arahant path knowledge. and there are no more pleasant deformance in Arahant mental skin. So since there's no defilement, then there's no suffering, only happiness. All the enemy, all the defilements are completely removed. Then he become a person full of happiness. That's why when Arahant, when you read the old text, Arahant always say, very happy, very happy, very happy. That happiness comes from uprooting all the defilements. So, this is the end of my talk. Any questions? You can. So, in tomorrow's retreat, I'm going to teach you two, concentration and vipassana. Concentration and vipassana both together, then you get familiar with the practice, and later on, even without teacher, you can practice on your own. Okay, any questions? The level of what? Which the level of?
Non-returning,
okay.
What about the bodhisattva vow to come back and...
Okay, good question. Okay. Bodhisattva vow, if you have bodhisattva vow, then you are unable to attain non-returning. You cannot attain non-returning. Bodhisattva, in the Theravada teaching, bodhisattva is not noble one. He cannot become noble person. Why? Because bodhisattva has a great vow. He wants to save all sentient beings. So he has to spend a lot of time to cultivate his parami, his perfection, his 10 perfections. In Mahayana we call 6 perfections, but in Theravada we call 10 perfections. So it takes very, very long time to cultivate. If he becomes a noble one, the first stage, let's say first stage, he only has 7 lives to come. If he becomes the third stage, he cannot come to this world again. How can he save other sentient beings? How can he cultivate his 10 perfection? So if you have bodhisattva vow, then you cannot become a noble person. You've got to wait until the last day you become Buddha at that time. At one sitting, you from bodhisattva direct become Buddha. Not today I become first stage, 10 years later I become second, not like that. In one sitting, you eradicate all the defilements and become Buddha. Also, the Buddha also Arahant, same, Buddha also Arahant. Arahant means clearing all defilements. Called Arahant. So Buddha also clear all the defilements. So Buddha is also Arahant. But not all Arahants are Buddha. Okay? Yes? Three sectors? Yes. So number one is identity view. He uprooted all the identity view. He did not identify his 5 aggregates as I, mine, myself. He has no more this identification. Yes. It's not I, not mine. He no perception as... Perception is just a mental state. Mental state. Mental state. It's not a person, not a self. It's not mine. It's not mine. If we say mine is with craving. Craving. If you say mine, for example, my daughter, my son, my property, with a lot of craving. You know? But this King Emperor, he still has craving, but his type of craving will not bring him, this type of craving will not cast him to the 4 woeful states. All the first states of sainthood, When a person attains the first stage of sainthood, we call Saint Emperor. His four vocal states, he no more reborn in a four vocal state. So he does not cling to the five aggregates as I, mine, myself. Yes. So he knows it's just a mental state. He does not cling to it as I. Perception equal to I equal to perception. He does nothing like that. He just knows it's a mental state. Perception has a quality of recognizing the object. Perception has a quality, has a characteristic of perceiving the specific character of an object. Then perception can recognize an object. This is the function of the perception. So he knows perception is just a mental state, has his own characteristic, has his own function. When it arises, then it performs its function, then it passes away. So this, he will see it in this way. He does not cling to perception as I, as a perception as I. He does not think in this way. If you continue to, you don't use that mind, it's I enough. It's not I enough. You need, because it confuses you, you just think in this way. Clean enterer does not identify perception as I. That's all. What do you mean mind? M-I-N-D mind or M-I-N-D mind? M-I-N-E, mind. M-I-N-D or M-I-N-E? Oh, perception is mind. Perception is mind, of course. Yes, perception is mind. It's M-I-N-D, but not M-I-N-E. Not I, not mine, not myself. All these are personality view, identity view. Of course, perception is mind. Mental state is mind. It's M-I-N-D. Yes. Number two is doubt about the three person. His confidence in the three person, become unshakable. You know, his confidence in the three person become unshakable. He has no more doubt about what Buddha, about the Dhamma, about the Noble Eightfold Path, about the Four Noble Truths. Then he has no doubt about the Sangha who really realized the Nibbana, who really realized all this Dhamma. He has no doubt about it. He had, and what's the question? He accepted it. Because he himself already experienced. Once you experience, your faith become unshakable. Only when you have not yet experienced, you are doubtful. But once you experience yourself with your own practical experience, your faith becomes unshakable. Okay? The third one is clinging to rights and reason. For example, during Buddha's time, many practitioners that practice self-mortification, they torture their body, they don't eat anything, and they don't wear any clothes, naked. And in the winter, they sleep on the ice, or they stand on one foot for a whole day long. So they torture their body. They think by torturing the body, then they can become liberated. absolutely cling to this type of vision. So called clinging to rights and vision. And somebody clinging to only praying, they think that only praying they can be liberated. And somebody only clinging to morality, they think only by observing morality they can be completely liberated. These are called clinging to riches, rights and riches. Because this noble person, he himself has walked the noble eightfold path, the right path. So he knows only noble eightfold path is the right one. Other cannot liberate, cannot get the right true liberation. Okay? Yes. How the noble eightfold path help the practice?
Yeah.
Wow, this is a long question. Okay, noble eightfold path comprise only three training. Actually, I have mentioned just now. Noble eightfold path. What is the noble eightfold path? Number one, right view. Number two, right thought. Right view. What's the right view? Understanding the noble, understanding the four noble truths is called right view. Okay, right thought. Application of the mind toward this four noble truths is called right thought. So these two comprise wisdom training. Then number one, right view, right thought. Then right speech, right action, and right livelihood. These three comprise morality training. That is before you come to practice, you got to clarify these three first. Then another three is right effort, right mindfulness, and the right concentration. These three comprise concentration training. So when you come to the, for example, come to the practice, you must put effort to be mindful all the time. You put effort to be mindful of your body, the four elements, and of your mental. The mental about feeling, or your perception, your feeling, your formation, or in your consciousness. So if you can put effort to be mindful all the time, then you develop concentration. So there are two types of concentration. One is called assist concentration, another one is jhana concentration, absorption concentration. But if we practice this short retreat, we are unable to reach jhana concentration. But we reach to the momentary concentration, moment by moment concentration. That also can help you to see the impermanent suffering and non-self nature of the phenomena. So in a sequence, we say right view first, right view, right thought, concentration, wisdom training first. But in the gradual practice, we've got to start with morality training first, then concentration training, then wisdom training. So these are noble eightfold paths. Okay, any other questions? Non-attachment? What I say is whatever phenomena, either perception, feeling, or formation including all your emotions, your anger, jealousy, delusion, all are called formations. So whatever phenomena, you just observe it, First important, when it arrives in your mind, you must aware first. This is called mindfulness, sati, mindfulness. If you do not aware the emotion which has arisen in your mind, then you will be carried away by the emotion. I know. So when first you aware first, then secondly, when you observe it, then you will see it arises, pass away. Maybe I talk about the pleasant feeling. When pleasant feeling, when we have pleasant feeling, we easily get attached to it. So you must be able to aware the pleasant feeling. If you do not aware of your pleasant feeling, then the attachment follow. The attachment will follow the pleasant feeling. If you are not aware of your pleasant feeling, you know, as a result, because of that pleasant feeling, dependent on that pleasant feeling, attachment arises, or craving arises, or attachment arises. If you are not aware of the pleasant feeling, but if you are aware of the pleasant feeling, and if you can contemplate it as impermanent, then the craving will not arise. The craving will not follow. For example, if you indulge in your pleasant feeling, of course you start to attach to your pleasant feeling. For example, when you eat something chocolate cake, very nice. Then you want more and more. Then craving arises. So, but if you aware, very nice, you aware, okay, pleasant feeling. You aware, then you look at this pleasant feeling, you observe this pleasant feeling, then if you see it pass away, then you will not take the second time. If you can see it pass away already, then no more attachment. Then it's very good for you. If you can see the feeling does not last for long, it's very good. Then you should mentally recognize. Mentally you recognize, feeling is impermanent. Feeling is impermanent. Mentally you must make a note, you know, impermanent, impermanent. Then, only then, your perception of impermanent becomes stronger and stronger in your daily life. Mentally make a mark, make a note is important. Okay, any other questions? No more? Okay, so this is the end of our Dhamma talk here. I'd like to say thank you for all of you to sit here, listen patiently to the teaching of the Buddha.